This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Today's show is presented by DaVinci Smart Drink. Order yours now at lineupmedia.fm/DaVinci. DaVinci, excite better thinking.
You need a mental boost? DaVinci Smart Drinks were designed with professional thinkers in mind. With key ingredients shown to improve cognitive function and increase mental energy, DaVinci Smart Drinks excite better thinking. Drink a DaVinci. Let it go to your head.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
Welcome in to This Day in History. Tony Hubert here with you and my partner Armand Kachigian as we're brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon.com. Today, we review, Armand, December the 2nd. What has happened on December the 2nd?
A lot.
That makes and affects the world we live in today. And the answer is, strangely, a lot.
Yes, well, it seems like
and we're going to get into some things that, on the surface, folks, you would think, not really a big deal. But Armand doesn't like some of these things.
Yeah.
And?
But I like some that a lot of other people don't like,
that's
too.
True. That's true. You tend to zig while others zag.
Yeah, yeah.
And excuse my voice today, but it's that time of year, and the cold and flu season is going around.
Why don't you just take a break, and I'll just do the whole show?
No.
I think a second opinion is necessary.
I think we need to temper your enthusiasms.
Okay.
Let's start in 1697, where St. Paul's Cathedral is consecrated in London. You ever seen St. Paul's?
Yes, I have.
You ever been in it?
Yes, I was.
Marvelous building. Christopher Wren, am I correct?
Yep.
So
sure was.
What a piece of property they had. You think they knew that when they built it?
Nice place.
Yeah, good place. Good place. You can see it from all over the part of town, too. I really like it. 1775, the USS Alfred. Now, why do we mention a ship from 75?
Yeah, why?
1775. First of all, how was it a USS ship in 1775?
Doesn't make sense to me.
Does not make sense to me at all. But this becomes the first vessel to fly what is called the Grand Union Flag, which would later become the Stars and Stripes, and the flag is hoisted by none other than the American naval hero, John Paul Jones.
Oh, I thought it was a Led Zeppelin keyboardist.
It could be, but it wasn't.
John Paul Jones, yeah.
1804, at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, Napoleon Bonaparte crowns himself Emperor of the French. How do you crown yourself?
Yeah, that's what he did.
Do you really grab the crown from the archbishop?
He grabbed it from the Pope.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he took it and put it on himself. Yeah, because nobody deserved to put it on him. So, in fact, I think that's why Beethoven changed his the fifth piano concerto from like Napoleon's.
He grabbed it out of the Pope's hands.
Crowned himself.
Did the Pope know this little move was coming?
I don't think so. I think he shocked just about everybody there.
Oh.
Napoleon was short, but he had some cojones.
But I've heard he's not that short.
Yeah, well, that's I don't know about that. I think, well, 5'6", 5'5".
But 5'6", 5'7", in 1800?
I agree.
Is probably the rather average height, right?
Yeah, a little,
what's
maybe
the big
a little
deal?
Undersized, but yeah, he wasn't like 4'11".
All right. 1859, a militant abolitionist leader known as John Brown is hung.
He's hanged.
Hanged.
Yes, that's the past tense of hang.
You don't know that he... Never mind. But he is put to death for his October 16th raid on Harper's Ferry.
And we know who foiled that.
West Virginia.
Robert E. Lee. Yep.
So,
by his boy. He had some help.
December the 2nd, John Brown.
Yeah.
Hanged. Well, 1867.
Fervent.
Tremont Temple in Boston. The British author Charles Dickens gives his first public reading in the United States. It's just worth mentioning.
I
love Dickens.
I
and
do
he
too.
Made it to the Midwest, where we are. He was in this area, which is, we are broadcasting from Edwardsville, Illinois, just outside of St. Louis.
Boy, did he get lost.
And he spent a little bit of time in this region, and some of the houses that were hotels at the time that he slept in or stayed in are still there and up. One of them's in Lebanon, Illinois, known as the Mermaid House.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do they have a sign there?
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Dickens slept here?
I got drugged there on a field trip to see where a guy slept from books I'd read.
Charles Dickens.
Horrible. 1927, following 19 years of Ford Model T production, Ford says, we got a new model for you.
Yeah, we've gone over the Model T.
This is the Model A. I never understood, Armand, how they went from T to A.
Well, I don't know. U doesn't sound right. I don't know.
V?
Possibly.
Skip a vowel? Yeah, you could. 1939, New York City's LaGuardia Airport opens. Now, was he the mayor? Was LaGuardia still mayor when they opened the airport?
You know, that's interesting. I think he was. Yeah, in the 30s.
That seems
awful.
He still
was around.
That seems awful boastful.
And I think, I guess it was called that, too. Because, you know,
or was it something? See, Idlewild's a different spot.
Right, that's Kennedy now. It's not the same. But I don't know. I think LaGuardia, maybe it was named after. I know, obviously, named after him. But,
I mean, you can
go. The mayor.
There's still original buildings from that era, too, at LaGuardia. If you ever see what TWA and some of the others operate out of there.
That's what they always say. We're a third where they, you know, when they want to, you know, when people want to spend more money on infrastructure, they always say LaGuardia always comes up in our airports.
Yeah, it should.
Now, how, you know, putting a new Starbucks in LaGuardia is going to, you know, create
hey, I like that Starbucks.
I got a conservative birthday today, too.
All right. 1942, during World War II, the Manhattan Project, led by Enrico Fermi, they initiate the first artificial self-sustaining nuclear chain reaction.
We discussed this when we went over Fermi underneath the bleachers at Stagg Field in Chicago. But I also want to say the man who actually postulated that there could be, after the discovery of neutrons, Leo Szilard, the Hungarian physicist, postulated that there could be a nuclear chain reaction. Now, why is Szilard, why is he significant? Well,
because he postulated there could be this chain reaction?
No, actually, his PhD paper was on Maxwell's demon, which we were discussing. If you think of a container with two areas of same temperature, and there's a door in between, a partition in between, and that partition has a door. If there is a demon that opens that door and allows the faster-moving molecules from one side to go into the other side, hence, the faster moving ones have more energy and more heat. You, in theory, are disobeying the law. And after you get the faster molecules get in, he shuts the door immediately. You are, in theory, disobeying or nullifying the second law of thermodynamics that entropy always increases. And that was Maxwell's demon. It was a thought experiment. Well, Szilard came up with the idea that he solved that by saying, if indeed there is this demon needs information to gauge just which molecules are flying faster and have the more kinetic energy. Therefore, by getting this information, ascertaining this information, his entropy, the demon's entropy, increases more than the information he gains. Hence, the second law of thermodynamics, entropy is conserved. It's actually getting bigger. And he got that's why he got his PhD. So that's Maxwell's demon, another thought experiment.
Thanks, I have a headache now.
And that's important. And he also worked on the Manhattan Project. And he thought, he came up with the Szilard message or letter. He advocated dropping the atom bomb somewhere, you know, bring the Japanese, have a delegation of Japanese to watch a demonstration of the bomb before you drop it on Hiroshima.
I've always advocated this.
Well, so did Leo Szilard. They didn't want to do that. And that got him kind of in touch with Leslie Groves, who will go over sometime.
If you really wanted to end it, just drop one right off the coast.
Well, that's what he said.
And let them see it, and they'll realize what's at stake, and it'll be over.
Well, it actually, he gave it to Secretary of State Burns at that time, and Burns never did pass it on to Truman, so it never even got to the president.
Mm.
But an interesting thing about Szilard also, he developed stomach cancer, and
you made it sound like he invented stomach cancer.
Did I say he invented it?
No, you said he developed stomach cancer.
Oh, yeah, unfortunately, he contracted.
He contracted,
stomach cancer. He was in the hospital. They didn't know how to treat the guy. He said, it's all over. He irradiated himself with cobalt-60, which they had done at the time, but he gave himself this massive dose that everybody said would kill him.
He became his own radiologist?
Yeah, they said it would kill him, or nuclear medicine doctor or whatever.
Right.
And it didn't kill him, and it cured him, and it has been used ever since. Cobalt-60.
Hell of a guy.
In that dosage.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
1956, on this date, December 2nd, the Grand Mall. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right.
I guess it's Grand Mall.
Grand Mall.
Grand Mall. I don't know.
Well, this boat reaches the shores of Cuba, specifically the Oriente province.
If only it had sunk.
And on board that boat
were
two gentlemen and 80 other guys.
Gentlemen?
The two men, rebels, guerrillas, were named Che Guevara and Fidel Castro. And the movement was the 26th of July movement, and they disembarked on this date in 1956, hence officially beginning the Cuban Revolution.
Yeah,
it'd take them three full years to get there, but they got there.
Yeah, long may they sizzle.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about someone in a second because apparently he really liked December the 2nd. In 1961, in a nationally broadcast speech, Cuban leader Fidel Castro declares that he is a Marxist-Leninist, and that Cuba is going to adopt communism.
Yes, and December 2nd, 2016, I declare Castro is a corpse.
Yeah. And in 1976, he became president of Cuba.
Yay.
He really loved December 2nd.
Yeah, December 2nd?
Your thoughts on the passing of El Presidente?
Gleeful. I'm going to toast a drink to his death.
I hate that
guy.
What is the saying among...
Common dictator. You know, per capita, he killed more of his people than Stalin did.
What about Pol Pot?
I think probably definitely more than Pol Pot.
Well, Pol Pot killed 30 million.
30 million?
Yeah.
No, I think 1 million. There aren't that many Cambodians.
Yeah, there were.
You have to look that one up.
What about
30
Mao?
30 million is a lot. Mao, 60 million. He's a champ. I think he's a champ.
He's your world heavy elite.
Okay. But then again, you're talking about a country that had, 700 million at the time.
Yeah, they were approaching a billion,
Cuba
probably.
Wasn't that big, and he killed like 120,000. And God only knows how many drowned on the way to the United States.
What are the clandestine services? What's the toast that they do when someone like that dies? I mean, they tried to assassinate the guy over 600 times.
And then, they put something to get rid of his beard. They want they couldn't assassinate him. They want at least
how the hell
have
do you miss that many times?
Well, De Gaulle, they tried to kill him. He's the champ. I think we've already gone on with that.
He's got more successful than...
There were bombs blown up under his car, and he still survived. They couldn't kill the guy. Of course, he's a lot taller than Castro. He's a bigger target.
I mean, something's up. Either someone was massively inefficient, or the ideas are just out to...
They should have done is demonstrate the atom bomb on Castro on that ship.
They should have
done that.
They could have.
A little
anachronism. 1982 on this date, University of Utah, Barney Clark, and I remember this as a kid, becomes the first person to receive a permanent artificial heart.
And
what was the name of the heart?
Jarvik 7.
Jarvik.
And that's one of the trivia questions I always ask. And here's the other one. How long did he live? They actually asked that in a trivia contest.
About 30 days?
18 days. Yep.
But the leap forward they made
was tremendous.
In 1988, Benazir Bhutto becomes the Prime Minister of Pakistan, becoming the first female to head the government of an Islamic state.
And
in 88, is Pakistan officially an Islamic state?
Yeah, okay. Of course.
Iran became an official.
They were at that time, I think, they were actually building Islamabad, which is the capital.
The capital now.
Yeah.
And the other female leader in the region.
She was assassinated, we should say.
Yeah, she was.
They blew her up. Actually, they couldn't figure out if she got shot or blown up. But they finally, 20 years later, figured out she was blown up.
Yeah.
Or not blown up, but actually head trauma from the explosion. Because they interred her, I guess, disinterred her, and figured out, I don't know who, what that
well, an explosion, an explosion of that nature.
Well, she was in her car, apparently.
She's in her car, and it was an open...
The sunroof, moonroof. I don't know, there's a sunroof, stick your head through, she's waving to the crowd. They took a bunch of pot shots at her, and then the bomb exploded.
But when the bomb explodes like that, what I never realized is it basically compresses air into sort of the density of steel.
Yeah.
So imagine getting hit by a steel wave.
Kills a lot of that's why people in the periphery get killed.
And while the while the outside effect may not look
it's not the explosion per se, it's what it does to the air and pressurizes it and everything else.
It basically scrambles the insides of you.
It blows you apart. Yeah, without even blowing you apart.
Oh. So the only other female head of state in that region would have been
Gandhi, I guess.
No.
Indira Gandhi.
Indira?
Right there.
In India, and in Israel, it would have been
Golda. Yeah. I can't think of any. I think doesn't Sri Lanka has a female president now, I believe.
All right. In 1993, Colombian drug lord Pablo Escobar is shot and killed in Medellin.
Yeah, you know, I guess, didn't they need like $10,000 a month just for the bands, rubber bands around their cash? Did you know that? They spent $10,000 a month, rubber bands for their money.
You got it going on if you're spending $10,000 on rubber bands.
And then I think they lost ungodly amount to rats eating the money.
Ugh.
That was some of their biggest expenses.
Have you ever seen Narcos on Netflix?
I've seen highly
recommend it. Yeah, highly recommend it to you, Armand. Highly recommend it to anyone listening. Check out Narcos on Netflix. And finally, before we get to our big topics, in 2001, Enron. Down in Houston, Texas, files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
You know, it was a bad deal. Ken Lay and Skilling, those guys were not nice guys. And, of course, they abused the shit out of it. And, you know, Arthur Anderson, that's what led to a lot of this problem. Because the guys that were the actual, the people that are supposed to be doing the GAAP, which is Generally Accepted Accounting Principles. Yeah, they were not accepting. They were not actually going by those. And that's what was, you know, the investor didn't know what they were investing in.
Plus, Enron was throwing some outlandish parties.
Yeah. I think we all would have liked to have been at. Yeah, I don't know, with the $7,000 to $10,000 shower curtains and stuff like that. Well, they look good when the investors are
toga parties. And
but we've got Sarbanes-Oxley. So sleep well. We're all protected. Thank God for our government. Sarbanes-Oxley. We'll go over that someday.
Okay, Armand. Here are the big topics.
OSHA legislation.
There are the big topics for December the 2nd. The ones that affect the world we live in today the most. It's your decision. You decide, along with us, which of these has shaped the world that we live in today the most out of these next five. And don't forget, brought to you by Amazon.com. Get your Christmas shopping done. Go to thisdayinhistorypodcast.com. When you see the Amazon banner, click and do your shopping. And we will reference books all throughout this program. And when we do, you can always go to Amazon.com. But you can also, if you would like an audiobook, go to Audible.com. And a free audiobook is waiting there for you if you simply go to audibletrial.com/thisdayinhistorypodcast.
Yep. It's a better deal than investing in Enron.
Yeah. 30-day free trial, an audiobook. If you're traveling over the holiday season, you can't go wrong. Put on the headsets.
Now, watch football, turn off the sound, and listen to a book.
No.
That's what I do.
Really?
I don't want to hear those stupid announcers.
Okay. All right. That's what you do, though.
That's what I do.
All right. Let's go. Let's take you to 1823. Now, this one,
I think this is the winner.
Every American.
Yes.
Every American.
Well, they've heard of it, but do you think they know what it is?
No, they. I think I am going to posit that 50% plus of Americans know what this is. On this date, in 1823, in a State of the Union message, the president, James Monroe, already giving it away, proclaims American neutrality in the future European conflicts to come, and he warns Europeans that they should not interfere in the Americas.
Yeah, right there. That should
tell you. The Monroe Doctrine.
Yeah, that's an inherent paradox right there, because we have never kept our big noses out of that hemisphere, and then we tell them to keep their business out of our hemisphere. Kind of the he'd roll over in his grave.
They
didn't
say anything about staying out of the.
He did neutrality and future of European conflicts. Yeah. Ha ha!
Yeah,
come on.
Well, it lasted about 100 years.
That's true, but still, but this
no, it really
until
did.
Now. We still enforce the Monroe Doctrine more or less.
Good,
and it's kind of cheeky. It's not our hemisphere. What business do we have? And this is the kind of stuff that leads to, for instance, Teddy Roosevelt, Theodore Rex, who thinks he's, King George III or something. You know, when back in 1904, when all these Latin American countries who had legitimate debt to Europe, they had been lent money, they owed the money, and Europeans wanted the money back.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said, no, you can't enforce this. You can't come get the money when these guys defaulted on their loans. Well, bullshit. Of course they can come get the money. They can't take over the country, but they were coming to get assets that were theirs that would have paid off these debts. And he said, no, Monroe Doctrine. He invoked the Monroe Doctrine. We've invoked the Monroe Doctrine
Teddy.
In Nicaragua. We've invoked it in El Salvador. This is all nonsense. I mean, this is ridiculous. Benito Juarez, we backed him. Now, when the French came in 1865, Maximilian, we backed him.
Emperor Maximum.
Do we have any business that was that any of our business? We just got out of a civil war, invoking the Monroe Doctrine. Cuba too, the Cuban Missile Crisis. Kennedy invoked the Monroe Doctrine.
If you're going to invoke a doctrine, it's a hell of a doctrine to invoke.
But you just said about the neutrality in Europe and those affairs. You said it lasted almost 100 years. I'm saying this is 150 years later, almost 140 years later. We got the Cuban Missile Crisis. So isn't it a bit of hypocrisy to have something like this? That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
I like it. Stay out of our hemisphere.
I like the doctrine about neutrality in Europe.
Yeah.
And, you know,
but as
the rest, I don't know.
Post-industrial age, Armand, it's hard to stay neutral.
I disagree with that.
The roots of globalization were already occurring.
Yeah, but that should be trade, not war.
Yeah, okay? But why do we go to – okay, but you answer this question. Why was World War I fought by the Americans?
The banks, of course.
Because
J.P. Morgan and Rockefeller.
You're right.
Well, yeah.
Globalization.
Because Woodrow Wilson was a dumb son of a bitch. That's why. With a PhD.
Now, what show are you going to hear that Woodrow Wilson was a dumb SOB?
Yeah,
only
right.
This one. ThisDayInHistoryPodcast.com.
A racist, too.
All right. It certainly has affected our lives to this day.
Absolutely.
It really has.
We almost went to nuclear war over
it. As Robert McNamara would tell you, they were moments away.
Pretty close.
I have heard tell of service people in Florida being ready to go in and invade.
That was the initial. That was when
and I don't mean Bay of Pigs.
Mulling over.
I mean the
invasion
big.
Or the quarantine or blockade.
One of my favorite stories.
Or bombing. You know, they're going to bomb the place.
Well, Guantanamo. Yeah. Still a U.S. base to this day. Right.
Yes, okay. It is.
My mother's roommate from college was a teacher at Guantanamo. She would teach the kids there. Now, to get off the island, of course, you had to fly out. And you had to fly through your sector. And then around and, you know, up towards Florida. Okay.
Yeah.
On one of the trips out, their pilot didn't really pay a lot of attention to that.
Uh-oh.
And a MiG pulled up alongside.
That could be deadly.
And her name is Judy Canoy. And she tells an amazing story about looking out the window.
If you live to tell it.
And seeing almost eye to eye with the MiG pilot, who was probably no less than 100 feet away. You know, and they're probably on just a carrier, a transport plane, nothing,
right?
And, you know, he's given the get the hell out of here, you know, motion.
It was nice of him because he probably could have shot them down. And,
that's,
got a promotion.
I mean, that is the Cold War in living color for you. Yeah. So the Monroe Doctrine, that might be a winner today.
It's the winner.
Oh, you think? Okay. Well, let's put this one on you.
The second runner up.
1845. James K. Polk proposes that the United States should aggressively go west. Yeah. He Horace Greeley'd the whole thing before Horace Greeley, I think, even said this.
Right. Well, yeah, that was long before Greeley. But
and the message, again, a State of the Union address similar to James Monroe is Manifest Destiny.
54-40 or fight and all that stuff.
There you have it.
Led to the Mexican War.
He had the forethought that they'd already had the Louisiana Purchase, but the Louisiana Purchase just goes to basically covers the Missouri River territory.
Yeah, he was getting a little aggressive with it, you know. Like
you still
the whole
have,
continent is
right,
ours.
You still have to go west of the Rockies, west of the Sierra Nevadas. But
yeah, and
they,
in the territory that's not ours.
Right, it's not.
Well, that's what, hence the Mexican War.
But again, imagine living in a country today where we are not sea to shining sea. I cannot.
I can. We were talking about it.
I cannot.
No problem.
I cannot. I think it's one of the wisest moves ever
this
for the United.
Manifest Destiny?
Yes, that for the United States to go coast to coast. In fact, they should have taken more.
What else do you want?
Philippines should have done that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to discuss them today.
Okay.
We
should have done that.
Sure.
They got Alaska.
Japan,
they got
Korea.
Alaska on a bargain. British Columbia, they did not get.
Should have taken Canada, right? I mean, War of 1812. Why stop?
Well,
okay.
I don't know. I think there's.
I'm not exactly sure what all this territory would do for us.
Territory? Are you kidding?
What do we need Canada for? What do we need? What, for natural resources?
Natural resources.
Okay, well, why? They're doing better with them than we are.
Well, I think Manifest Destiny is hugely important.
I think it shapes the world we live in today. I can easily imagine us not having the territory you say.
Would the United States be the superpower it was didn't go coast to coast?
Better. We wouldn't have a $20 trillion debt, in my opinion.
Still be a first world power.
Yes, absolutely.
Are okay. You well, you'd be with a lot less citizens today.
What's that got to do with anything?
Well, you need that.
Do we?
Well, maybe not like you used to.
Right. But that's what I'm saying.
There, yeah. All right, let's do
something. Probably went out of civil war either, because that was one of the parts of, you know, extending slavery into the, you know. But we'll get to that someday, too.
All right. We're halfway through our big topics. We got three more to come.
Our argument.
But let's do some of our birthdays, as we always do, in the halfway point of the show. I think you have some ones that I don't.
Yeah.
I love this one. 1859, I start with George Surratt.
Well, I don't know how you love it. He's a pointless.
Here's why.
I liked Sunday
Afternoon in the Park, which is featured in Ferris Bueller's Day Off,
is
a lot.
It's at the Art Institute.
Of Chicago. It is a huge canvas.
You really can
stand in front of it, just like Cameron
did. Almost a life-size people
on
it.
And you can really sort of lose yourself in that painting.
Yeah.
And for a lot of kids in the 1980s, that was their introduction to sort of modern art. It was in that movie, and it was because of the scene that John Hughes decided to do.
I like the old masters myself, but Seurat, he's fine.
Yeah, but it's that scene. You know, Hughes decided to go ahead and do that scene, and it was really a tribute to the Art Institute, you know, because they have a whole montage scene.
Listen, if you're going to play hooky from school, there are worse places to go.
Oh, and they sit in front of the Chagall windows and those. It's wonderful. 1891, German painter I really like, Otto Dix.
Not familiar with
Expressionism.
No, he's
good.
I'll check it out.
1924, on this date.
Yeah.
Let me
have a sound bite to go with this one.
Well, let me give you a little taste of somebody. All right, let me load it up here and
control.
Oh, you may not have heard that. As of now, I am in control.
Ah, you know, is that odd? Because wasn't the quote always, "I'm in charge here"?
No, this is him at the podium. This is, and the man we're talking about, Alexander Haig.
Why do I have "I'm in charge" here?
The American general and
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State at the time. I'll play it again for you, Armand.
He was close.
As of now, I am in control.
He was in fifth or sixth place. He wasn't too far off.
Too far. He only had four people in front of him.
VP, Speaker of the House, President Pro Tem of the Senate, then Secretary of State, right?
Four. Yeah. But boy, did he take to that podium.
Happened.
I mean, the
take charge kind of guy.
Reagan is in the hospital, and he's at the podium.
Boy,
did he catch shit for that.
Well, that didn't help him, and then he didn't play well with others, apparently. He had a lot of problems, and about a year and a half after he resigned.
1929, Dan Jenkins.
I don't know this guy.
Okay, he is a great sports author and journalist. You would love him because he is simply a tell-it-like-it-is guy. His daughter, Sally Jenkins, a fine writer for the Washington Post.
Okay. Does he call Woodrow Wilson names, too?
I don't know if he's so concerned with Woodrow Wilson, because he's probably more concerned with what's going on golf courses.
All right.
1931, on this date, Edwin Meese is born.
Is he still alive? I think
he is still alive. He would be the Attorney General under Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. 1935, an author I highly recommend, David Hackett Fisher.
Don't know.
He has written many books about the American Revolution, including one that I would totally recommend. Get it on either audible.com or amazon.com if you want to read the full thing, called Washington's Crossing.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's a great read. And
I assume the Delaware we're talking?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And
who painted that? You know, my dad won all kinds of prizes on a game show, and they asked that question.
Was he on 21 or something?
No, The Big Payoff.
Oh, The Big Payoff.
Yep.
Okay.
Emanuel Lutz.
Was he Polish?
German.
German. Oh, he was a Hessian.
In fact, here's a trivia question.
Was he really a Hessian?
No, he was there? German. No, he wasn't there. That's the thing. He painted Washington crossing the Delaware, and the ice is wrong, and it gives away that he painted the river as the Rhine. It was not the Delaware. He was never anywhere near the Delaware.
Now, that's fascinating.
Yeah, because they could tell
good
by
stuff.
The ice he painted. It was not the same ice.
1939, Harry Reid, the American lawyer, politician.
You know what I said about Wilson?
Careful.
I have nothing to add.
Careful. Okay.
But, you know, now the interesting thing about him, remember Casino, the movie Casino?
Well, he was the Nevada State Gaming Commissioner at the time, played by Tommy Smothers.
Yeah. He was the inspiration.
And that's
that.
who plays him in Casino.
He's retiring, so let him go right off.
1946, Pedro Bourbon, the Dominican-American ball player, is born. He passed away in 2012. 1946, Armand wears a lot of these clothes.
Versace.
Gianni Versace is born. And I thought he was older than that.
Yeah, but, he's a young guy. Yeah.
And he died.
I guess his sister took over.
Yeah, Donatella.
That Cugnonan guy was nuts. Crazy. He killed about 5-6 people.
Crazy. That was truly drove up to the man's house and shot him.
Yeah, he's crazy.
1968, actress and producer Lucy Liu is born. And in 1973, Armand, this is
you're
going to
give it away with this sound bite.
Well, hold on. Loved her. Monica Seles.
Yeah.
Well, no, I could listen
tense.
To
she's
her grunt.
Okay, yeah, she did.
She even did a commercial where she would grunt during the commercial, just reaching stuff. It was wonderful.
Gunter Parchei, I guess is how you pronounce it.
The guy who stabbed her?
Big Steffi Graf fan, apparently. Yeah, stabbed her.
That was horrible.
You know, he didn't go to jail. 2 years probation and psychiatric treatment. Obviously disturbed.
Very.
I don't think she ever played tennis in Germany again.
Would you?
No, I don't blame her.
1981, Britney Spears is born.
I don't think she's ever played tennis in Germany either.
She's played in Germany, but yes, I don't know if she's picked
topless,
up a racket.
Probably. Yeah.
No. She's a fine girl.
Okay.
Dancer.
I retract.
It lists her here as dancer and actress.
So am I.
And singer and songwriter. In fact, all four of those are totally debatable. Singer?
Well, she's a singer.
No.
No? Wow. You're harder than I am.
No.
I think she's got a pretty good voice.
We can put you in a studio, Armand, and get something out of it. Dancer, she can move. All right. 1983, Aaron Rodgers, quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, is born. One of the best QBs going today.
He had a good game the other night.
Yes, he did. All right, back to it. Here we go with one that I know you're going to love. Armand, I love just picking your brain and
I think
finding...
you're to the point now where you know what I'm going to say before I even say it.
Well, I do. Okay. Right. But I was a huge fan of this in terms of history. On this date, December 2nd, U.S. President Herbert Hoover, he proposes a $150 million public works project to help generate jobs and stimulate the economy.
Yeah,
this,
good idea, Herbert.
During the Great Depression, what becomes essentially the WPA.
Well, that's what it morphs into.
It morphs into. But the public works done in the 1930s, thousands of which you can still see to this day, have shaped the look of our nation.
That's the problem. But what you cannot see.
What can't I see?
Is what was taken out, all this capital taken out of the economy. Read Henry Hazlitt, Economics in One Lesson. That's the problem. We see the Golden Gate Bridge and we see TVA and these wonderful projects, Hoover Dam, etc. But what you do not see is what is taken away, what we could not build because we took all this capital, which we need, and get done these inefficient, even though, granted, they've done great things for those regions. In the long run, there's the seen and the unseen. Read Frédéric Bastiat and read Henry Hazlitt.
So you're saying opportunity cost.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what would you have built other than the Golden Gate Bridge?
I wouldn't have built anything. I would have kept the money in the private sector. I wouldn't have taxed the people for those projects.
And done what?
Whatever.
So the private sector is going to build bridges.
Maybe not. Who cares? If it's a bridge that's necessary and it's a profit, believe me, that bridge will be built. We don't need the government to do it. There it is in a nutshell. And I'm going by, you know who influenced me. We know. Friedrich Hayek, Frédéric Bastiat, Milton Friedman.
Yeah.
Okay, these are the people.
A lot of guys whose names start with F.
Okay. Well, Gary Becker.
Whose
birthday it is today. We'll talk about Gary Becker. The Austrian School of Economics.
Yeah, so the public works, though.
Yeah, they did nothing.
They did nothing.
They hired a bunch of people, but those people had the money stayed with small business instead of being going to federal government and having the federal government pick winners and losers, which is what always happens. Sure, some people profited. Same thing with tariffs. And I'd like to put to bed immediately right here that Hoover was a laissez-faire guy. That couldn't be further from the truth. Read Murray Rothbard, The Great Depression. He talks all about Hoover. Hoover thought he could cure everything with government. Believe me, he was worse than Roosevelt, as far as I'm concerned, because what he did, he ran the food for World War I.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy that, you know, food will win the war. That was like his saying, his mantra. Okay.
Yeah.
So there were wheatless Wednesday and meatless Monday, and maybe more or less made people suffer just so we could feed the troops, supposedly, so where there wouldn't be rationing. It was
sure.
all voluntary.
Right.
Okay. Well, once the war ended, he thought, hey, this is pretty good.
Why
so he kept
continue?
It. Now he's going to feed Europe. And he thought he could do anything this guy did with government. And he was what we would call a fascist because he thinks government should be in charge of the economy. And that's what he did. He started Reconstruction Finance Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Agricultural Adjustment Act, the AAA, was based
yes.
on one of his, that was Roosevelt, but it was based on his Agricultural Assistance Program or whatever the hell. They had all these acronyms.
I got to tell you, you're making a case that this has more of an effect on our lives today than the Monroe Doctrine from earlier.
Well, one foreign policy, this, I think, you know.
Domestic policy.
Domestic, yeah, because that's, yeah, this was the beginning. And what's laughable is FDR ran against him on this. He said, the guy's getting government intrusive into our lives, ran up the debt, thinks government can solve all our problems. He's leading us to that's what John Nance Garner said. He's leading us to the doorstep of socialism. That's the vice president under Roosevelt, which is laughable when you hear that coming from those guys. And that's what they're running on. When we all know FDR only won because he wanted to bring back booze. He wanted to end prohibition. That's probably a loss for Hoover.
Well, there's something I can get behind.
Okay. Well, I agree with that one.
Who doesn't want booze?
But anyway, it's a myth that Herbert Hoover was this laissez-faire, I don't care kind of guy, and government should stay out
of it. I
got to
tell you, I've never been taught that he was a laissez-faire. I've never once can remember one thing I've read or a history lesson in school or college that said Hoover was laissez-faire.
Well, that was the perception. The guy does not care. He's not doing anything to help us. And I don't know where that came from, but that's part of, you know, Roosevelt said, I'm taking an active part in ending the Depression. So I'd like to say, I haven't seen a textbook in a long time that they're teaching school in anymore. But
I might grab my sophomore.
Yeah,
I have a sophomore
okay.
in high school. I might grab his and look through that and see what
they're
saying.
If they even mention him, I don't know.
Well, no, he certainly does know about the Great Depression.
You know, that'd be an interesting person.
She certainly does.
Bring her in sometime.
It's a he.
Okay.
The other one's in college.
All right.
Yeah. The other
one's
at your alma mater.
I'd like to. Wouldn't that be interesting to bring them in and see?
Absolutely. I'll bring them in. She'll be home.
What they've been taught.
Yeah. You went to UCLA. My daughter goes to UCLA. And we'll bring her in and see what. Because she's up on her history.
Okay.
Okay. 1954. Two more big ones left. This one Armand wanted to touch on. And it is big. The United States, the Senate, votes 65-22 to censure a senator for conduct that tends to bring the Senate into dishonor and disrepute. Disrepute.
Disrepute, yeah.
Okay? That senator in 1954, of course, is Joseph McCarthy
of
Wisconsin.
All right. Now, what's your opinion of Joseph McCarthy before I render mine?
Well, so, you know, it's a red scare. He's a power-hungry guy. And he's using it as a political tactic, and he did quite well with it until he went over the edge.
Well, but what I would posit though that his accusations were true.
No, some accusations I'm sure
more than some, many of them, most of
them. But you come at this from a Hollywood background, right? Where. Like, okay, for instance, a film director like...
That wasn't McCarthy. That was HUAC. That was the House Un-American Activities Committee. That was the Dyes, Martin Dyes from Texas. Like the Hollywood 10?
Mm-hmm.
That was HUAC.
Okay,
he never went after Hollywood.
So what about Ilya Kazan?
He went after this, yeah.
So he's a guy HUAC. who named names.
Edward Demetric.
The Academy when he
that
died.
Was HUAC.
Was one of the
that
greatest,
wasn't McCarthy.
That wasn't McCarthy.
No, that was the House.
Okay,
that was
the House.
Right,
House so
Un-American
here we have
Activities
the Senate.
Committee. Yeah, he went after... the State Department, which is where he was right, because if you read the book, it's probably on I'm sure it's on Amazon, probably on Audible, it should be, The Venona Secrets. Because basically, for 40 years, the FBI had recordings of what was going on in the Soviet embassy, and it confirmed a lot of this. Owen Latimer and a lot of these, Harry Dexter White, these guys were communists. Harry Hopkins, Confirmed. These guys were all communists.
So it is on Audible Books. Excellent. The Venona Secrets, Exposing Soviet Espionage and America's Traitors. It is narrated by a man named Jim McCants. It's by Herbert Rammerstein.
It's well documented. It's got a good bibliography.
Eric and Brindle?
Believe me, these guys, they know their stuff. Venona was a secret project by the FBI, and it vindicates McCarthy. Now, McCarthy, right, the guy was megalomania. You know,
well, that's my two things, but megalomania and pushing too far.
But here's the
far.
Point. Here's what led to his downfall, which most people don't know. You know who his co-counselor was during most of this and really tempered him? Robert Kennedy.
I was going to guess.
Yeah.
I was going to guess Jack
Kennedy.
Once
they had a falling out and Robert Kennedy left, then he kind of went really screwy. He went after the Army, which got a lot of people pissed off. You know,
can't go after the Army.
Marshall.
Not in 1954.
But there were some spies in the Army, too, which was verified. Read the Venona Project.
Secrets. The Venona Secrets.
Yeah, but that's the project. You know, the book is Venona Secrets, correct?
Right.
The project was called Venona.
Well, it's there for you if you want to use it as one of your...
Make your own decisions on the guy.
If you want to use it as a free audiobook download, yeah. Audible trial...
That'd be the first one I'd get.
.com/... This Day in History podcast.
Honeycombed with traitors.
Get yourself the Venona Secrets.
Yep. And you'll have a different opinion of
you got
Mr.
16 hours
McCarthy.
And 10 minutes of listening.
Wow. That's great.
Well, that takes these things take a while.
Yeah, it took me a while to read. That's a big book.
Now, the world we live in today, post-McCarthy, I have never once been afraid of being labeled a communist, being labeled anything, socialist. And I know I know relatives, though, I'm sure in the 1950s, were somewhat afraid of being tagged with this, especially if...
I'm not sure if they were afraid of being tagged with it, but they were afraid of being overrun by it. You know, that was the zeitgeist of the town, and I'm not at the times. Basically, it was another... That's what government does. They make a threat and make us safe from the threat, okay? The Russians never, Mao foozling about, you know, taking over the world, really had no navy. They're not going to do that. Hitler, too. We already discussed that. But the Russians were not power hungry. And what we did, like Ike did and Reagan and these guys, they basically did the right thing. They had what they would consider deterrence. And, they tried to counter Soviet moves. But there was never a war fought like there was World War II.
No.
You know, for Poland, of all things.
No, here's the one thing I want to say about detente.
Yeah.
Okay. Every day that the bomb doesn't go off is a day that it works.
Yeah.
And it works right up until the second that it doesn't.
Well, we didn't even have any really hot war. I mean, well, Korea aside.
Some people will say the Cold War was a hot war, though.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Because it was fought by proxy.
There were deaths.
Well, hold on. No. Mm-hmm. Hold on, Armand. Because you know it was fought by proxy all over the globe.
Yeah.
So saying it's a Cold War, is... You know, there were definite hot.
Would you say the war on terror is a Cold War then? Or
no.
Okay, so it's a definite war.
It's a war. War always evolves and reshapes itself, and it always will. Ever since you moved from two standing armies lining up and going to town.
Yeah.
And, once you.
But do you feel that Russia was the threat that they made it out to be?
No.
Okay. That's what I'm saying.
Never.
And that, hence you have McCarthy. When you have hysteria, you have a McCarthy figure rising to
Yes. And
Nixon, too.
Used it to political advantage.
True. But what he said was true, basically. That's the thing. Was the guy a liar? I don't think so.
Yeah, but there's degrees. I hate to say there's degrees of truth. But
he went after the State Department.
There's over exaggeration here.
It wasn't. If you read the Venona Secrets, it was not that over exaggerated. I mean, there
that
it is.
That over exaggerated, you say.
I mean, I'd say not at all, really. If you read that book, believe me, I was taught the same things you were, and I had the same opinion of the guy till I read that book. And these are documented FBI documents. You can't quibble with these, I don't think, unless you can find a source that says these are all phonies. But he's got them. I mean, they've got the actual pictures in the book.
There you have it. Okay, one more big one. I put this just for you.
Yeah, I think I'll leave the room now.
In 1970.
A date which will live in infamy.
December 2nd.
Yesterday.
Under President Richard Nixon.
Let me do my FDR. Yesterday, December 7th, 1941. A date which will live in infamy. There you go. Go ahead.
Can you do it like Nixon? Because I don't know if he said it that way. But the new government agency began.
Yeah, of all people, Nixon does this.
Began operations. See, He's a totally different type of Republican.
Actually, you're right. I was just going to bring that up. That's today, a myth, too. That guy was a very liberal president.
There's no question.
Of all, yeah, Nixon. I don't know how anybody could call him conservative.
Well, he was a bastard, but...
Okay.
I'm
not disagreeing. I'm laughing.
If you block a peace accord talk to help you win an election while lives are being lost, you're a bastard.
Well, I mean,
now I will concede. I think he was highly intelligent, so intelligent that it may have worked against him because he crossed the line into paranoia.
Yeah. Well, he had some. Yeah, he had a definitely. He's an interesting psychiatric study.
But his politics.
Yeah.
If you dropped them into 2016,
he is very
would
liberal.
Not be recognized
well, I'll tell
by
you,
today's
he took us
GOP
off the gold standard.
Right.
I mean, that's.
That's
that was
huge.
A big mistake, in my opinion.
Well, because
anyway.
It's only fiat money from now
yeah,
on.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, so.
Money
yeah.
backed by debt, essentially, yeah. rather right. than gold.
Right, of course. And hence, we've got all these problems. But anyway, we'll go to that sometime.
But let's get to the one
but
that
anyway,
I,
yeah,
I
the
put
one
this
you
down.
Want to stick right in
so,
my face today.
Richard Nixon, during his administration, the operation of this agency, the United States Environmental Protection Agency, begins. And
oh,
as a
don't say that.
And as a kid... The three letters I remember a lot from my childhood are EPA.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like from 19, as soon as they got their feet on the ground, boy, did they go to work.
You know, and at the time, it wasn't such a bad thing. It's a cancer now, I think, in my opinion. First of all, these people are all bureaucrats. They've not been elected. They've been appointed.
Well, it is an agency.
Right, but here's the thing.
It's not a department.
Have you heard of the law of diminishing returns?
Yes.
Okay. Now, back then, yeah, the water and the air were dirty, and, you know, you had lakes.
You don't think Flint, Michigan needs the EPA today?
No, that's a state issue. What the hell does the EPA have to do with it? That should be the state of Michigan, not even the state of Michigan. That county, whatever that is, Wayne County. Why does the the EPA and the federal government have to step in? That's ridiculous. That is a local problem. They didn't cause it. How are they going to cure it, the feds? All I'm saying is... They did do a lot of good things. I mean, you got the Cuyahoga River catching fire and stuff.
Yes.
Okay,
I understand. You have Love Canal.
Right. They cleaned. That's all been cleaned up. Our air is clean. Our air is cleaner than it's ever been. Not ever, I'm going to say, but cleaner than it's been since the 60s or before.
No, cleaner. It's
cleaner than the 60s.
Probably cleaner today in some aspects.
Right. They've cleaned 90% of it out, Tony. All I'm saying is the EPA, it's never good enough. Now they have to be 99% particulate free.
But
that's not good enough.
Well, here, let me give
law
you an example.
Law of diminishing returns.
I don't know if you lived here at the time. You may have. You may have lived in the region. Mm-hmm. There okay. was a city west of St. Louis, Missouri.
Times Beach. Sure.
Okay. It was found to have dioxin.
Correct.
At approximately one part per million.
And that the federal government put there. That was Agent Orange, right? That
yeah, it was sprayed.
From the Vietnam.
It was sprayed there.
Right.
As
they should clean that up.
Okay. The city was, you know, a city of about 2,000 people.
Right.
Basically.
A lot of problems, yeah.
Basically wiped.
Carcinogens.
Wiped clean off the map.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
For one part per millionth of dioxin.
Yeah. But where did the dioxin come
from?
Hold
on. I'm going to tell you.
Okay. Please do.
My dad worked at a chemical factory.
Yeah.
He knew the man doing the spraying.
Right. But why do we have dioxin?
The test at his factory, which will go unnamed, to figure out what the dioxin level there was 100 parts per million.
That's lethal, probably, I would think.
Yes.
More than lethal.
He died of lung cancer, and all of his coworkers have died of lung cancer.
See, that's what I'm saying. Things like that, that's what you need an EPA. I don't even know if you need an EPA. I mean, I would think a bunch of lawyers are going to sue, and you know, there's going to be repercussions.
Well, that's part of the things like mesothelioma.
Right.
Now, look, asbestos is not,
right.
you know, a...
Well, they didn't know, they didn't know what it was, the silicosis and all that stuff. But here again, these things can be solved without this tremendous bureaucracy that we have now. I'm saying, for instance, the pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline, the EPA, the State Department and the EPA over and over have said that this is safe. They reroute it. They've taken it around places that it could be a problem. Downstream in rivers, not to go through Indian territories, etc. But they still don't want it, and this is just outrageous. And the biggest, of course, my bete noir, black beast, of course, global warming. Now, when you start telling me that what I breathe out is a pollutant, you're out of line. You're crazy. That's government run amok.
I don't think I ever told you that, Armand.
No, I'm just, not you personally. I'm just saying. But that's the raison d'etre of the EPA now to go after all this global warming, which they themselves admit, even if we totally...
Hey, look, when you're an agency, you got to find things that keep your funding
damn
coming,
right.
Okay? We
exactly.
all know this.
I couldn't have said it better
okay?
myself.
We all know this, whether you're
proper?
A Democrat or you're a Republican,
right, of course.
Whether you're left, right, liberal, or conservative.
That's correct. The function of government, especially these agencies, is not to cure anything. It's to continue getting funding. And that's the problem we have. And the EPA is one of the main culprits. That's all. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Began operations on this date, December 2nd, 1970. Now, as far as the ones that affect the world we live in today, you're going to vote for the Monroe Doctrine. I am going to vote for Manifest Destiny. I am.
Okay.
If there's one thing that James K. Polk
maybe
got,
I'll think it over.
I go with Manifest Destiny.
Well, I got a couple here. I got one that I think interesting one. You know, because since you brought up Hollywood, and you know, I love Hollywood. I'm a
you're a movie guy. Yeah, you're a movie guy.
Debuted on this date in 1933.
King Kong.
No.
Oh,
close. Fred Astaire's first movie. Can you name it? And his first dancing partner.
It's not Ginger.
No. No.
Great story about Fred Astaire that Dick Cavett tells.
Well, this was Dancing Lady.
Because what
Joan
was the term?
He
gave Ginger.
Yeah,
class?
He gave her class. She gave him sex.
Yeah, sex appeal.
Yeah,
yeah. And Dick Cavett saying that Katharine Hepburn told him that.
Right. I think. I mean,
and they're in the back of a car driving through Hollywood, and the windows are rolled down.
Who?
Cavett and Fred Astaire. This is years later, and Cavett's telling the story, and they come up to a stop sign, you know, and they're in the back of the car, and he says that, and he says, well, you know, that's what Hepburn says. And right on cue, with two ladies who were obviously tourists standing right outside the window to the car, you know, right there at the crosswalk, Fred Astaire just blurts out, fuck Katharine Hepburn.
Oh.
And the car pulls off, and Cavett goes, I can't imagine what those ladies thought.
I guess they knew who it was.
Because they did. They could see clearly. They knew. You could see that they recognized it was Fred Astaire. Oh. And then the first thing they
good
hear
for Fred.
Is...
Well, this is interesting about that movie, The Dancing Lady.
Yeah.
Well, it was just called Dancing Lady. Clark Gable was in it. And Ted Healy and his Stooges, who we're all big fans of. Now, you know Ted Healy, right?
Not really.
Okay. I don't know if we've got to do a whole, because that's going to take a while.
You might have to do a whole. Okay.
But also, Franchitone was in it. Now, this story, one of my favorites in Hollywood history. Franchitone was married to Joan Crawford. Pretty good actor. Actually, very good actor.
Hmm. Okay. This is before Orson Welles?
I don't think she was ever married to Orson Welles.
Joan Crawford.
Yeah, Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
She was in Dancing Lady.
No, she's in The Outlaw.
No, you're thinking Jane Russell.
Damn it.
Joan Crawford. Anyway, she was.
Is that Mommy
they
Dearest?
Were married. Yeah, right.
Okay, now
which,
I got.
Which I don't know. That may be apocryphal, no. But that's again Joan. But Franchitte. Okay, they get a divorce. They were married 1935, 1938. They got a divorce. He marries some other gal. They get a divorce. Then he takes up with Barbara Payton, who's like this 1950s bombshell. You know, from the Marilyn Monroe, Jane Mansfield. You know, Mamie Van Doren kind of build. You know what I'm talking about?
I like a Mamie Van Doren.
Oh, that's the way I like him too. This gal was
that's women.
One of them.
That's women.
That's, yeah, those torpedo bras.
He
took up with
figure.
Barbara Payton. Yes, I like him buxom. She was buxom. Franchitte apparently liked him too. Well, anyway, he takes up with her, even though Joan Crawford said, look, she's a chippy, she's a tramp, don't go out with her, don't marry her. But men being men, he totally disregarded that. Well, he went off on some business trip somewhere, and she goes to the swimming pool and sees Tom Neal. Who's a kind of a second-rate B actor.
Like a Ronald Reagan type?
No, no. Ronald Reagan was a B actor. This guy's a Z actor, let's put it this way.
So he's not in Tyrone Powers
guy's
category?
No, he's an amateur. He's not even Buster Crabbe's category. So this guy's like an amateur boxer, but he looked pretty good in swimming trunks, and she saw him at the pool and started having a little affair with him. So they're supposed to get married. Well, Franchitte comes back, and she decides, maybe I'll marry Franchitte. Well, Tom Neal is throwing a party at her house. He's living with her. Barbara Payton throws a party for himself. It's the night before they're supposed to get married. Barbara Payton shows up at the door with Franchitone, holding hands, you know, the whole deal. They're still, now they're back together again. That's the kind of gal she was. Well, Tom Neal didn't like this. And then I guess Franchitone said, step outside, brother, if you don't like it. And Tom Neal beat the holy shit out of French at Tom. He was never the same after that.
We're going to start
Broke his jaw, broke his cheek, broke his nose. He needed extensive he's in a coma for a day or two.
Good grief.
Yeah, he needed extensive facial surgery. And then when he wakes up about a week later, they get married, Peyton and French at Tom. But there you go. Tom Neal beat the crap out of him. Could you imagine that, though? The night before your wedding, you're throwing a party for yourself.
Who played Superman? George Reeves?
Yeah.
This sounds like the worst version of George Reeves' life, is what it sounds
like.
Yeah,
we'll go into his death someday, on that anniversary.
And speaking of deaths, that's how we wrap up the show. We always do with some deaths.
Although Franchitone practically was dead.
All right. Now, I bring this one up, Armand, because there are a few dates in history. Now, this is his death.
Yeah.
But I'll bring up why.
This may be the biggest one of all today.
I think it is.
Might be our winner.
Okay. On this date, Hernan Cortez dies in 1547. Now, I'm not saying there's dates in history I'd like to go back to see.
Yeah.
So I could see how people reacted. And one of the dates has always been, ever since I read this as a kid, I would love to see the reaction of his men when he ordered the ships burned.
That was a ballsy maneuver. But, if you're going to have your men desperate and,
Can you imagine standing on a beach in what is now modern-day Mexico?
There's no way to go up because that was basically—
And he orders the ships burned.
Because there was no retreat now. They have to advance.
There's only one way.
Right. Yep.
I mean, I would have— I would love to go back and be there for that scene.
Well, if you want to see something similar, watch, the one with Tyrone Power you just mentioned. You got Captain from Castile.
Captain from Castile.
Who played him? Who played Cortez? The Joker?
Romero.
Cesar Romero. Yep.
1814 on this date, the Marquis de Sade.
Ah, one of my favorites.
Now they list him here as a philosopher, author, and politician.
Yeah,
that's
singer,
kind.
Songwriter,
that's
dancer,
kind.
And actress. Yeah. He was an author.
Now, is it true
he,
that the
writer,
is it true that the word sadist?
Yes.
Is
Marquis
that,
de Sade?
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Absolutely.
In
he didn't want to work for the Marquis de Sade.
No,
he had a habit of flaying his maids.
It was not going to end well.
Yeah.
1892, Jay Gould, the American businessman and financier, dies.
Crony capitalism, Jay Gould, always vilified as the quintessential robber baron. Well, how did he get all his power? How did he get his money? Tweed helped him out.
Boss Tweed helped him out. And if you've ever seen The Men Who Built America on the History Channel,
Gould and Fisk trying to corner
a big section of that documentary.
One of the big, and that was one of the, there was also a big scandal in the Grant administration.
In 1936, on this date, John Ringling, the American businessman
and co-founder
of Ringling Brothers. Okay. He passes away. And let me play you a little clip of this next gentleman, okay? He's one of my favorites. He's gone way too quickly, all right? Get it going here.
Dr. Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
You're putting me on.
No, it's pronounced Frankenstein.
Who is it?
Do you also say Frodwick?
Obviously Marty Feldman. No.
It's not Gene Wilder.
Yeah, he just died,
Why
unfortunately.
Isn't it
That's too
Frodwick
bad.
Frodwick Frankenstein.
It isn't. It's Frederick Frankenstein.
I see.
You must be Igor.
No, it's pronounced Igor.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love
okay,
it.
You know, I like Blazing. I don't like Blazing Saddles. I did like Young Frankenstein
better. But Feldman did some great stuff. Also on this date, 19, and then that was Marty Feldman, passed away in 1982. Also on this date, December the 2nd, 1986.
I didn't know you had sound for this one.
Desi Arnaz.
Yeah.
Now, how did he pull Lucille Ball? How did he do that?
How did he what?
How did he get Lucille Ball?
Well, he's a good-looking guy.
I know he's a good-looking guy, but, I mean, was he really in her territory?
Those Latin American guys get everybody.
Suave,
I mean, come on.
Just
suave. You can't compete with that.
He died on this date, 1986, December the 2nd. 1990, Aaron Copland.
Now, he was gay. We didn't have to worry about him taking women from us.
Okay. The American composer, conductor, he passes away. Now, the next one, I don't know if you'll know this guy.
I don't know this guy.
I have seen this guy in concert 5 times.
Oh, good for you.
Okay. His name is Bobby Keys. He passed away in 2014 on December 2nd. He is the saxophonist for the Rolling Stones.
Oh, okay.
And was with them from the late 60s all the way to the last tour.
Is there a last tour? There's going to be more.
No, there's more. They are coming out, I think, next week with an all blues album.
Jeez.
Old time blues, just like they were fell in love with them when they were teenagers.
All right. Well, I got a couple myself.
All right. Deaths?
Well, I got one death and a couple of birthdays because, you know, these are addenda.
Okay.
Edmund Rostand. Do you know who he is?
Not familiar with his work.
Just one big work. Playwright. Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh, yeah. I love the Roxanne version of that with Steve Martin.
Yeah, you would.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you have to profane every classic.
Well, no. Who played Cyrano in the 1930s?
Jose Ferrer.
Jose Ferrer.
He won the Academy Award for that.
That was a good. That's a classic. But Roxanne, come on. That's a good fun remake.
Moments.
Yeah.
Gary Becker was born in 1930.
Yeah, the Chicago School.
Nobel Prize winner.
You can kneel down to him later.
Milton Friedman's
student.
Yes, yes. Mount Pelerin Society.
Uncle Milty.
One of those.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you, Gary. Bless you. Peter Goldmark. Now, you should know this guy.
I thought you were going to say Peter Tamarkin.
No, Peter Goldmark.
Nope. Doesn't ring a bell.
Innovator of the long play album, 33 to 30.
Oh, the LP.
Yeah, and he had the color wheel. You ever seen those color wheels
like
before the days of color TV?
Yes.
That was Goldmark.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
Peter Goldmark.
Well, that's a
he
biggie.
Died. He died in
December 2nd.
2006. Right. And I'm surprised my favorite soprano of all time. Did you see Philadelphia, the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Remember the part where Tom Hanks plays La Mamma Morta?
Yeah.
Who sang it?
James Gandolfini, your favorite soprano of all time.
Don't mock me. Maria Callas. Come on. Hey. She was a very interesting woman, Maria Callas. She was kind of a chubby, ugly little girl. And her mother, she apparently had a beautiful sister, and her mother preferred the sister. Mother wasn't, classic Cinderella tale.
Yeah.
Anyway, the sister didn't have anywhere near the voice Maria had. And she takes these lessons 5-6 hours a day, really arduous. She was a hard-working woman. Anyway, she's about 200 pounds. She's 5'9", 200 pounds, classic, Zoftig.
Well, she had the classic woman's figure. She was just in the wrong century.
Well, she lost 80 pounds, and her voice was never quite the same. That
no,
was
because
the
problem. Your diaphragm suffered. It's like the Streisand.
She lost some muscle.
Remember
that?
They would say to Barbara Streisand, how come you don't get a nose job?
Yeah,
it affects the tone.
Probably would. Well, yeah, you can imagine what 80 pounds off you.
Well, that's it. When Pavarotti lost the weight,
not
the same. And I saw him when I was
I've seen him.
I've young.
Seen, Domingo, too. But, anyway, then she, she's most famous for being Aristotle Onassis's mistress. And he dumped her for Jackie O.
Yeah.
He traded
up.
I don't know about that.
No, I don't think he did.
She had a Maria Callas.
Not every day.
Renata Tebaldi.
Not every day the opportunity to marry the First Lady of the United States comes along.
She can't sing like Maria.
And
Maria was a pretty good looking dish. She got better. Obviously,
I don't think Aristotle was interested in her singing.
She had very bad. Unfortunately, she probably ran into things a lot because she had terrible eyesight and very myopic. She had big, thick glasses.
Ugh.
Yeah, so she had a great voice, but her eyesight was.
You and your singers and composers.
She died in, actually, she was born in 1923.
1923?
Yeah, Maria Callas.
Okay, there you have it. All right, that'll do it for this edition. December 2nd is in the books. We've been brought to you by Amazon.com and by Audible.com. Follow us on Facebook at This Day in History Podcast. That's all you need to search at Facebook, facebook.com/thisdayinhistorypodcast. And, of course, our website, thisdayinhistorypodcast.com, where we have blog pieces up for you, and you can listen to all of our past episodes. We bring you new shows Monday through Friday, so tune in tomorrow when December 3rd rolls around here on lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.